step by step.
Group Thursday night Alcoholics and God speaker step study. I'm a recovered alcoholic and my name is Mitzi. Thank you for joining us tonight. In 2 minutes we're going to start our 2 minute meditation, so please take this moment to get situated and turn off all devices that might and will distract others. Take this time to get connected with God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to keep help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? All right, let's get started. So those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the Big Book, pages 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have found a way out which we can absolutely agree, which we can join in brotherly, harmonious actions. That's a great news this book carries for those who are suffering from alcoholism. I've asked Oracle to read the spiritual experience in Appendix 2. We read this because it's the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
My name's Oracle, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Oracle.
Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon carefully reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that, in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difficult long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spiritual of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is content prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer, Alcoholics Anonymous, pages 567 and 568. Thank you.
Okay, and I've asked Ryan to come up for a joke.
What's her?
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Ryan. All right. A husband and wife married for 25 years are driving down the road when the wife screams at her husband, "Slow down, the speed limit's 35. The husband screams back, "I'm not speeding." Several minutes later, the wife screams out again, "You just ran a red light." The husband, getting more angry, yells back, "The light was yellow, not red. Don't tell me how to drive." A few minutes later, the police stop the couple. The officer informs the husband that he was stopped for speeding. The wife exclaims, "I told you you were speeding." The husband then tells her under his breath to shut up and is getting angrier by the minute. The officer asks the husband if he is aware that he also ran a red light. The wife then says, "I told you the light was red." The husband then screams even louder at his wife to shut up again. The officer, then concerned for his wife's safety, asks the wife if her husband always treats her this way. She then tells the officer, "No, he only acts like this when he's drunk."
Refrain from talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please turn your phones on airplane mode or meeting mode, or just turn them off. And it is my pleasure tonight to introduce Pat with step two. Please. Good luck.
The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA. I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and for that I will be forever grateful. AA didn't just give me my life back, but it gave me one worth living, and I have an absolute blast in recovery. And Mitzi and I were talking before the meeting, and my favorite part of AA is sitting there watching everybody in this fellowship, like, leave everything out there and come in here, and everybody is loud and laughing and just having a great time. And I know everything's not perfect out there, but it's like this safe haven that we come into here, and I just love being a part of that. I love being a part of the joy and the transformation that takes place in this in this program. We were also talking about our shared, slightly nervous disposition that we have, and and it reminded me of probably the first time I ever opened up my mouth in AA. I was one of those people who came into the room and sat in the wall of shame. You know, I was like relapse row, I call it today. But, you know, get as far in the back of the room as you can, you know, just in case the readings get to you, you could get up and get the hell out, you know, before you'd have to read anything. Because I was not into, I wasn't going to participate. And somebody grabbed me before I could escape and asked me to read how it works for the first time. And I got to the word constitutionally. I had never seen that word before in my life. I was like trying to make up a word. I didn't know what the hell that word was. And rightly so. What would I know about being honest when I got here? You know, and I was like, I was mortified. Absolutely mortified. If I could have run out of that room at that time, I would have. And you know, everybody yells out, you know, stupid constitutionally, you know. And I don't know what I said, but it wasn't that, you know. And I never forgot that. I thought, man, I got to get out of here. I mean, I, you know, like break my finger, just don't hurt my feelings and don't embarrass me. You know, I don't mind the physical pain, but the emotional stuff I can't handle. And, you know, it made me think of that. And I said last week, I'm waiting for this nervousness to go away, and I just don't think it's going to happen. It's... I think it just keeps me accountable. So we're going to, you know, I said step two, but, you know, we'll talk a lot about one and two probably the next couple of weeks, you know. And, you know, Bill spends a lot of time on the first two steps. You know, he spends, you know, the doctor's opinion in four chapters on the first two steps. And it's just informationally, it's a treasure trove as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, we talked last week about the contribution that the doctor makes to Alcoholics Anonymous, and where the lights came on for me, and where somebody finally told me what the hell was wrong with me, and why drinking was causing me so much trouble. You know, I answered the two questions that every alcoholic wants to know. You know, why can't I stay stopped, and why can't I control it once I start? And Brian, sitting in his little Mazda behind the Fifth Chapter Club, you know, answered those two questions for me. And it's the only two questions you need to define yourself whether you're an alcoholic or not. I mean, the fact that you've been arrested isn't relevant. That what you've lost isn't relevant. Where you come from isn't relevant. What your background, what your childhood was isn't relative. You know, I talked last week a lot about, you know, why I might have that slightly nervous disposition, you know, what took place in my household when I was growing up. You know, none of that has anything to do with why I'm an alcoholic. You know, it may have something to do with why I needed a drink, but it had nothing to do with why I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic because when I want to stop, I can't stay stopped. And once I start, I can't control it. The two questions that they ask on page 44 in the first paragraph of We Agnostics, probably for the fourth time, you know, if when you honestly want to stop, you find you cannot, and once you start, you find you can't control the amount you take, the book says, then you're probably alcoholic. Yeah. Probably, only because I can't pronounce you alcoholic. Only you can pronounce yourself an alcoholic. But let me tell you something. If you're given sufficient reason, you can't stay stopped, and once you start, you can't control it, have a seat. You know, you're one of us. You're in. Yeah. And then it goes on to say that you may be suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer, you know, and that's a requirement. You know, there's the good news and the bad news, right? The good news is when you come here, you don't have to believe in anything. That's the good news. We have no second requirement. There's one requirement for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a desire to stop drinking. You know, that's it. The bad news is this is all about God. Good news, bad news. So, you know, I found out why I couldn't stay stopped, what my problem was, why I couldn't control it once I started. And by the way, it doesn't matter how you got there. You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, the physical illness, there lies the problem, is that I'm never going to change that. That I'm once an alcoholic, I'm always an alcoholic. And why is that? Because we're physically different. By the way, the doctor's opinion is not the doctor's opinion anymore. You know, they may have not, look, 1955, I don't know what the AMA knew when they said, okay, now it's a disease. I don't know what they knew then. But I know in the mid-90s with PET scans and functional MRIs, they've proven the doctor's opinion. It's no longer an opinion. We are physically different. You know, our bodies react physically different than the average temperate drinker. Charlie used to always talk about the disease concept of alcoholism. You know, it's gone so much further than that. You know, it's this idea that once an alcoholic puts a drink in his body, there's a chemical breakdown that takes place when it's processed, which causes our body to store acetone, which sets off the serotonin in the brain, which causes the physical craving for more. You know, something that's never going to change. How you got there? I'm an alcoholic. I was born an alcoholic. I just believe I caught the genetic bullet. You know, I come from a long line of alcoholics and addicts. You know, two grandfathers dead from this illness on both sides of the family. My grandmother on the Irish side of the family dead from this illness, directly related. My dad had four brothers and two sisters. He has one sister alive today. Right? He drinks a half of vodka to go to sleep every night. Right? He says it's potato vodka. I'm not sure what that means. You know, I think he's like telling me that it's good for you. You know, I think that's what he's telling me. And it's an Irish thing. It's potato vodka. It's good. Now, I don't know what he's trying to, you know, make go away or what urge he's trying to satisfy. But I had two sisters and a brother. You know, my one sister has 2 years less sober than I do. My brother had skipped. You know, I don't know what's wrong with him. You know, anybody have one of them in their family? Like everybody's a drunk but the one, you know. My brother's that guy who can go fishing with a six-pack and bring 5.5 back. You know, he's the one pouring out the half a beer because it got warm out there on the way in. Yeah. Take it or leave it. He doesn't need it. Yeah. He will go to a party if there's no liquor there. Like, I used to qualify the party, you know. Well, are you going to have some drinks, or should I bring my own? You know, my brother doesn't ask that question. Yeah. My sister, who was 4 years younger than him, died of an overdose about 6 years ago. So it runs rampant in our family. Runs rampant. Right? I caught the genetic bullet. You can drink and drug your way into the allergy. Right? The liver and the pancreas that process the liquor are the first organs of the body that are targeted. Alcohol is a poison. It's a toxic substance. It destroys the organs, and they no longer process the liquor and the drugs like they used to. And all of a sudden, you develop the allergy. Age brings us in here, right? You see people landing in here in their early 40s, late 40s, early 50s, late 30s. Some of us, the body grows to a certain point and starts dying. Once it starts dying, it starts degenerating. The organs don't process the liquor like it used to. And you develop the allergy. But here's the thing. Once you have it, you have it. You know, once the cucumber becomes the pickle, you're always the pickle. You're no longer ever going back to being the cucumber. Just not happening. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. So the trick is just don't pick up the first drink, right? I mean, don't do it. Just don't do it. If every time, the book talks about, I mean, spends a couple of chapters on that. I had a 20-year history that said you can't safely drink, but I would convince myself that it would be different this time. I would conveniently block out what it was doing to me in favor of what it was going to do for me and convince myself that I'd do something different this time. We were laughing at the restaurant. My brother's allergic to bananas. We were talking last week. My brother's allergic to bananas. It's pretty funny, actually. He doesn't think so, but I think it's funny. Every once in a while, we used to slip him bananas, you know, because his lips would blow up, you know. But then we'd see he couldn't breathe real well, so at some point it wasn't funny anymore, you know. My brother has no desire to eat bananas. Ever. Ever. I never heard him say, you know, I haven't had a banana for a while. I think I could have a banana today, you know. I've never heard him say, you know what, it's the brand of banana. You know, if I could just switch to those Dole bananas and get away from these Chiquitas, yeah, I'd be fine. You know what it is? It's the people I'm eating the damn bananas with. That's what it is. I got to get away from these people, eat these bananas with somebody else, right? No, you know what? It's where I'm eating the damn bananas. If I move to South Florida and eat the bananas there in better weather. Never have I heard him say anything like that. Does anybody identify with that? right? Switching brands, right? Switching places, switching people I'm hanging out with, you know, the list goes on infinitum, you know, here's the things we try, right? And this is what people tell us, right? The non-alcoholics look at us like the jaywalker in the book. Like, damn it, every time you jump out in front of the car, you get hit. Stop jumping out in front of the car. You know? Drink like a gentleman. Drink like a lady, for God's sake. You know? Control your... You think you'd do it for your wife. You think you'd do it for the kids. Right? My mother used to tell me, you're killing me. Please stop. The only time I can get a night's sleep is when you're locked up. Please stop. You'd think you'd do it for that, right? Our book says... You know, that's what separates us. That's what separates us from the person like my brother who can take it or leave it alone. Or the guys that drank with us, right? They look like, you hear these guys, they'd say something like, I used to be alcoholic, you know, and then I quit, right? That's not what this book is talking about. You know, those guys, they look just like us. Jimmy D, one of my best friends, Jimmy D from Penn Hills, we were from the same high school. We partied up there. We separated for a while. He moved down here. We connected again, and we had the time of our lives down here for a while. A lot of drinking and a lot of dry goods. You know, and Jimmy was right there with me. Right there with me. We had a lot of fun. And one night, his wife called, and she said, Jimmy, if you don't get your ass home right now, right now, and stop what you're doing, I am leaving. I'm packing my shit, and I am leaving. Jimmy went home. He went home. We didn't party no more after that. Now, I'm sure he detoxed. I know he needed it. You know? Jimmy's still married today. He's got 3 kids to that woman. I'm on my 3rd marriage. He was given sufficient reason to go home, and he went home. That's what separated me and Jimmy. He wasn't one of us. He wasn't that real alcoholic they talk about on page 20, that real alcoholic, that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, that guy that does incredibly tragic things when he's drinking, resembles himself but little when he picks up a drink, goes to bed so messed up, he should sleep for a week. But I'm up the next morning, man, and on my way to get a drink. Or whatever it takes to get to work. I don't know if I shared with you guys last night or not. I used to spend $300 to go to work to make $80. How stupid is that? It made perfect sense, though, to me. And I want to tell you something. I was the best damn employee they've ever seen. I'll tell you that. I went around. I was like a rabbit running around there, man. You take an 8-ball and send me to work. I am hell, man. And they said, look at that son of a gun go. We need like 6 of him, you know. Racked up $100,000 in debt working for a living. Given sufficient reason, right? The wife leaving. I lost custody of my son. Freedom, losing your freedom. I mean, they're all sufficient reasons. So what the hell can I say stop? Look, all I got to do is not pick up the first one and I don't get drunk. And you hear that crap in here, like, put the plug in the jug. Man, if it was that damn simple, I'd say, thank you so much. You know, thank you so much. I can go home now. Now that I know that I just can't pick up the first, it's the first one that gets you drunk. I used to say, no, it's not. No, it's not. It was just that easy, huh? So what the hell is going on? What the hell is going on? You know, talked about William James facing this insurmountable obstacle and admitting that it's insurmountable, but here's the rub. Admitting that I got nothing on it. There's nothing I can do about it. That my only answer can come from a spiritual solution. That's a requirement for recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a requirement. Being convinced that only a spiritual experience will conquer the problem. Einstein said it, that one cannot fix the problem with the mind that created it. Well, at least in the same mindset that created it. With the same thinking that created it. Something's got to change on the mind side. Because physical, I'm never going back to the cucumber. physical, I'm never going to be able to control my drink. I never have. I mean, look, our book says if you're not convinced of that, go do it. Go try it. Because the truth is, we don't want you here if you're not one of us. I don't want somebody standing up and sharing in my AA meeting that I just put the plug in the jug. Get the hell out of here, man. You'll kill somebody with that. You will. Somebody will be sitting here who's the real alcoholic saying, well, he could do it, I could do it. But that's not what we're about. I've tried the plug in the jug method. I've tried white knuckling. I've tried holding my damn breath. And that's what it becomes. That's what it becomes. How long can you hold your breath? You know, come in here and just not drink and go to meetings. And look, I'm all for not drinking and going to meetings. Because if you don't drink and go to meetings, you will eventually hear the solution. You gotta not drink. That's number one. Can't come to meetings drunk. Not gonna work. But we can't give you that, man. We can't give you that first step. You gotta get that. You know, the fellowship, the book really talks about two powers. It talks about the power of the fellowship. That thing that I enjoy so much when I come in here, like no matter what's going on there, I walk into these rooms. I don't know who else feels that. I just go, whew, yeah. You know, there's just a great power in this room. You know, the power of the fellowship is powerful. I need you. I relate to you. I identify with you. We have a common suffering that we bond together over. We get each other. I know how you feel, and you know I know how you feel. When the doctors and the psychiatrists and the clergy all tell you how you feel, you know they don't. No, you don't. Well, I know how you feel, son. No, you don't. You have no idea how I feel. You have no idea. No non-alcoholic, unless they are in the program, but no non-alcoholic knows what it feels like to take a drink against their own better judgment. Right? Forget about the obsession. Forget about the black curtain that comes down between me and the truth. Forget about this idea that blocks out the truth. What about when we deliberately say, F it? How many have said that, right? F it. I know where this is going, and I'm going anyway. I knew I was going to be tested. I knew it. I just couldn't stand me for one more second. Couldn't stand being me for one more second. Can't stand the way I feel for one more second. Restless, irritable, and discontent. The doctor touches on the spiritual. The doctor touches on the emotional. I've been restless, irritable, and discontent from day one. I'm 5 years old going to school and I'm restless, irritable, and discontent. I don't know it. If I could have had a drink then, I would have. I didn't know that was a solution at five. I would have had one, I guarantee you. If I'd have known that would have fixed that, I would have had it. I did other crazy stuff as a kid, you know, to just take me out of myself. Thrill seeker, adrenaline junkie, sex, whatever. Whatever will change the way I feel. I knew I couldn't stay stopped when I got here. I felt hopeless. You guys gave me hope. You guys offered a solution. Now, I wasn't too happy about it. I wasn't too unhappy about it. I was kind of negative with it. Yeah. Hey, the tremendous fact is we have found a common solution. That's the great news that this fellowship carries. Right? Because the fact is, I have lost the power of choice in drink. That I can't with sufficient force bring to my consciousness the pain and suffering. It says a week or a month ago. I'm telling you, I couldn't remember this morning. I couldn't remember the pain and suffering of the argument this morning. I couldn't remember the pain and suffering of leaving that jail cell this morning. We are without defense against first drink. I was talking about my first felony that I got last week. And it was the first time I landed in a county jail in the population. I've never been so scared in my life. You know? I'm John Travolta in county jail, right? I'm like 125 pounds with my platform shoes on, my bell-bottom pants, my paisley shirt with the big collar, you know, hair down to my shoulder. I look like a date. And I'm going to be a date, and I know it. You know, I mean, I'm scared. I'm I'm telling you, I was never so scared in my life. I'm in front of that judge the next morning. I'm begging his ass, you got to let me out of here, man. Tears are coming down my face, and I ain't afraid to admit it. I've never been so scared in my life. You got to get me out of here, man. I'm not going to do well here. You know, these guys are big. I'm just this little scrawny addict. You know, just get me out of here. And he felt for me. He ROR'd me, man. Go ahead. We got a court date. Da-da-da. Go. I walked out of that jail. I'm never so happy in my life. I look out. Thank you. What a break. I get on the bus, head back towards the impound to get my car. I'm thinking, shit, I got a court date. Man, I need an attorney. I got no money for an attorney. Damn it. Restless, irritable, and discontent. I'm worried now. You know what? I need a drink. I just need to take the edge off, right? That was my thing. I just need three drinks, not one. I need three. I just need three, because at three I get, my breathing stops getting shaky. I just get calm at three. You know, I was drunk before I got to the impound lot. I had just promised the judge that if he gave me my freedom, I would never pick up again. Without defense. I forgot the promise that I made in favor of doing something about the way I felt internally. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences that have revolutionized our lives. Central fact of our lives today is that we have had, that God has entered our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous and commencing to do for us what we could not do for ourselves. That's the solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you got another one, go at it, man. Go for it. But that's the solution we have to offer here. You know, it's, and I love the reading you guys do. I usually read it at the end of this session because it's so vital. I mean, it's, you know, we know that Bill had this white light, clean wind blowing through a mountaintop experience in Towns Hospital, and he's passing that experience on to everybody else who's not having that same experience. And in the second printing of the first edition, he adds the spiritual appendix. Because people were writing letters going, how come we're not having this white flash, white light experience that you're having? What are we doing wrong? And I love the first paragraph of that reading on the appendix too, you know. And what it tells me is it teaches me two things right there. That a spiritual experience / spiritual awakening is nothing more than a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. That's what it is. And it can come in two forms. It can come either quickly, spiritual experience like Bill had, or slowly, over a period of time, incorporating these principles into your life, having a spiritual awakening over a period of time. And then Bill uses 15 words that mean change. And the only thing that can defeat us is not changing. It's the only way to be defeated here is to not change. Something's got to happen on the mind side because nothing's changing on the physical side. Something's got to happen internally because I'm an emotional freaking cripple. That's just the truth. You know, that's my story. You know, that's why I drink. Because I don't do life well medicated or unmedicated. I need medication in any form. Alcohol was always my real drug of choice. You know, the quality's always good. Didn't have to go into bad areas to get it. Yeah. It was accessible. I could just drink, but if you got something to enhance it, I'm down with that too. Yeah. But I'm that guy. I'm that guy in Disney World that doesn't get it. You know, I'm the guy that says, this sucks. I mean, there's 10,000 people having the time of their life, and I'm going, shit, is it hot? You know, these lines are freaking long. Who wants to stand and eat? This sucks. I'm the one. Right? I'm the guy on the way going, we ain't going to find parking there. You know, why are we even going? Why are we going? It's going to take us 2 hours to park. There's going to be long lines. It's going to be hot. You know? But give me some medication. And I have the time of my life. And I don't care which way we go either. I mean, we could go down, and I'll just let everybody in front of me and enjoy myself and be courteous. Or we can go up, and I can do all three parks in 8 hours. And I've done it. It can be done. Just don't do well. I need a power greater than that. That's powerful. I need a power greater than that. And when I came here and heard that that was a solution, I wasn't thrilled to death, but I also was happy to see that somebody was smart enough, educated enough, somebody that was armed with the facts, took me through the book and took me through We Agnostics, because I wouldn't even have read it. It's not for me. I'm not a non-believer. I've always believed in some kind of God. But half of us that come to this fellowship have a God problem. Are either agnostics or atheists. Half of us. And Bill creates this funnel for everybody to come through. Everybody. There is no belief requirement. The second step says, came to believe that. It doesn't say came to believe in anything. Came to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity. Could means some conditions have to be met. There's some things you got to do. What is sanity? The ability to see the truth before I pick up that damn drink. The ability to see what it's going to do to me instead of what it's going to do for me. But I need something to do that for me. Because if I don't find an answer to that, I can't stay stopped. If I don't find an answer to my emotional state, I can't stay stopped. That's that cycle I was in all my life. The doctors, the restless, irritable, discontent, ease and comfort that comes at once from a couple of drinks. Boom, off to the races. Destruction in my wake. And emerge from that, I'm so sorry. So sorry. Or full of guilt and remorse and shame. I swear to you, never again. I swear to you. And I would make it a couple of days, sometimes almost a week, before I was so damn irritable that I fell prey to the relief. I just couldn't take it. I just couldn't stand it. I'll tell you how I got the second step, because we're results-based people, right? You can tell us all you want. Show me. And that's why every step has a promise. I call it a result. Do this, you'll get this result. We all call them promises. Bill calls them results. Right? If you do this, this will happen. You do this, that'll happen. This, that'll happen. And he gives us a formula for recovery in that chapter. And it doesn't start with faith. It ends with faith. It doesn't start with belief. It starts with a willingness to believe. If you believe, you're one up. The only thing I will warn you that if you're a believer, maybe your way is not the only way. Maybe you're not the only one that got it right. Maybe there's a bunch of paths to the same place. But you just be willing to believe, make a decision, take some action. Once you get results, you can't help but believe. That's why there's no requirement. Just do the work. So I come into the fifth chapter club, and I'm shaking, I'm detoxing in the rooms. And this is before I met Brian. Right? And I'm white knuckle, I'm holding my breath, trying to stay sober for my first 90 days. I mean, I'm raging, I'm falling apart in AA. What I think is a program, I think I'm working a program, and I'm falling apart. I mean, I'm not better, I'm worse. You took my medication, for God's sake, how am I supposed to be? Alcohol was not my problem. It was my solution. It was causing problems. But it was my solution internally. And now you took it. And I'm saying, the fifth chapter club was cool. The fifth chapter club had a meeting room, and then right next door to it had a club room. And you paid like $10 a month dues if you could use it, have access to the club room, and 50-cent coffees and snacks, and you could go over there and play chess and checkers and cards and whatever. Frank had a really cool setup there. So if you didn't like the BS you were hearing in the meeting room, you could just go in there and talk some BS. And Camper John, was the bartender every night. I don't even know what his name was, and I don't know where. I always ask where he went. His name was Camper John. Right? He lived in a camper. Right? And you could find Camper John either Denny's Pompano or Denny's Deerfield behind there in his camper, you know, if you really wanted him. Hence Camper John. Right? And Camper John looks at me and he goes, "Man, you don't look good." And I said, "Well, I don't feel too good either." And I was obviously shaking, sweating. And he says, "It's good to have you here." He says, but I don't think you're going to make it through the day. And I said, "Well, thanks for the one up there, John, you know." He says, "Well, here, you need to get up in the morning. I'm going to tell you what our solution is." And I had, you know, I'm just sitting around. I'm just doing the meetings and Denny's thing, you know. And he says, "You need to get up in the morning and ask God to keep you away from a drink. And then at night, you need to thank him." And I says, "Okay." And I start to walk away. He goes, "Wait a minute." He says, "You're not going to make it through the whole day, though." He says, "So you need to break your day up into 24-hour increments. And you need to ask him to get you till 9 o'clock. And then at 9 o'clock, you need to recommit until 10 o'clock. And you need to break it up into 24 hours and ask him to get you from hour to hour to hour." Now, I had never heard that concept. I mean, you guys talk about one day at a time and all that. I mean, I'm still new to the program. I don't get that. But I start to do it. I'm desperate. Okay? And I start to get up in the morning and ask God to keep me away from a drink. And as soon as I would start to feel shaky, I would run to the bathroom. I was working in South Miami opening up a retail store for an appliance company. And I'd run into the bathroom and I'd get on my knees and I'd ask him to get me to lunch. Okay? And I'd start getting shaky again, and I'd go back into that bathroom. I said, "Get me to 3 o'clock. Just get me to 3 o'clock. And I started getting through some days. Yeah. And I started to believe that maybe there was something to this God thing. Results. Results. I got results. And I just didn't feel quite as shaky. Now, maybe part of it was that I was detoxing. But I was still, and I'll tell you, I was so impressed after about 4 or 5 days of this that there was a jewelry store next door, and I figured, well, if this God thing's working, maybe I need like a God symbol, right? So I go to the jewelry store next door, and he buzzes me in, and I said, "I need a cross." And he says, "Well, you want a crucifix?" I said, "I ain't going that far. Just give me the cross." Yeah. Now, I don't know if there's a solution there or not, but I'm starting to wire in. I'm starting to dial in a little bit. I'm starting to believe. Right? I still have that cross today. I bought it 26 years ago. I've lost it 3 times. You know, and found, I've lost it in my yard twice. And just recently, I lost it at a customer's house who found it and called me. Right? I'm supposed to have this cross. But I'm starting to get something out of it. And that's what this whole thing is about, is just take that leap. Believe that we believe. Right? Believe that I believe. Bill goes as far to say you could use the group for now. In the 12 and 12, 13 years later, he wants to funnel all of us in here and says, "Look, come in here and believe that they believe." That's a step off of where you were. We agnostics ask you to take one step off of where you are, one step forward. Wherever you are, take one step off of it. Okay. To me, the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous happens in Bill Wilson's kitchen, which I got to go to this year, finally, and sit at the table where him and Ebby sat. You know? Carl Jung was my favorite definition, and it still is my favorite definition of a spiritual experience. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes were once the guiding forces of these men and women, replaced by a whole new set of conceptions, right? Change the way we think, we change the way we act, our lives change, right? Ideas, attitudes, and emotions, right? Now, Carl Jung gives that information to Roland Hazard. Why does it matter? Because Roland Hazard goes off to find a spiritual experience and opens up the Calvary Mission in downtown, in Brooklyn. Was it in Brooklyn? Did we decide what it was in Brooklyn? Yeah. It opens up the Calvary Mission. What the hell? Why is that significant? Because Ebby Thatcher gets arrested up in Vermont and gets court-ordered to the Calvary Mission. First court-ordered alcoholic ever, right? Why is that significant? Because while he's at the Calvary Mission, he's in two-way prayer, and Bill Wilson comes on his heart. He starts asking about his buddy Bill and finds out Bill's in deep trouble. And he's now armed with a solution to alcoholism, and he takes that solution to Bill Wilson. And him and Bill sit at that kitchen table and talk about a solution to alcoholism. And Bill ain't buying. Now, Bill's hopeless. And he knows Ebby's across the table and Ebby got something he needs. But Bill's raised by his grandfather, who was anti-religious. Bill has no use for religious people. But Ebby's transformed. And he can't deny that he's transformed. Isn't that what we kind of see here when we come here? We see people who we've heard their stories, and we go, my God, how can that guy be sober? He's transformed. And it gives us hope. Bill doesn't throw him out. Bill, I love when Bill tells the story, though. Bill tells the story like this, that the more Ebby's preaching, and Ebby's selling Jesus Christ to Bill. I mean, let's be clear. He's selling first century Christianity. That's what he's selling. Yeah. And Bill ain't buying it. And Bill says, the more Ebby preaches, the drunker I got. Because he's drinking gin and pineapple juice while Ebby's ranting. Okay. And out of pure frustration, Bill says, Ebby yells across the table, then damn it, Bill, why don't you just choose your own conception of God? And it shuts him up. And he says, you know what, I can do that. And then he goes on to say, upon that simple foundation, a wonderful spiritual structure can be built. And we're given permission here to choose our own conception of God, however inadequate somebody else might think that is, or however arrogant somebody else might think that is, because it's a step off of our arrogance. It's a step off of, I'm committed to disbelief, okay, I'm willing. Now, he didn't say, by the way, and I hear this in the rooms, he didn't say that this alcoholic can create his own conception of God. He says that you choose a conception of God, and he gives you a list of choices to choose. Like, we can't, like, create a tree is going to be my high. Good luck praying to that in the middle of the night, you know? Oh, holy tree, you know? And that's really what I did. You know, I chose my own conception of God. I needed a God. Look, I grew up Catholic, and I'm not a Catholic basher. It sounds like I'm a Catholic basher, but I'm not a Catholic basher. People come up to me earlier when I'm doing the steps or a big book study, and they go, will you stop bashing the Catholics? And I go, wait, I'm good. I'm back, you know. Look, I heard, I don't hear today what I thought I heard then, you know. Maybe they've changed. I don't know. Maybe I've changed. What do you think? Me? Yeah, I think so, you know. I used to say, their message changed. Nah, I changed. Yeah. But here's what I heard. Right, I'm a young kid. My grandmother was committed to taking us to church every Sunday. We went to Catholic schools. When we weren't in Catholic schools, we went to catechism. You know, we did the sacraments. We did all that. Here's what I heard in church: that if you jump through the hoop, God loves you. Right, and if you don't jump through the hoop, you're going to the fire. Right? Or we had this thing called purgatory. I think it's a halfway house. You know. I think, like, if you, like, you weren't bad enough to burn, you weren't good enough to go into the gates halfway, you know? And I remember something about some prayer, and I don't remember what the prayer was. People would pray this prayer, and you'd get shot up, you know? But that's the God of, that was the God of mine. No, that's where, that landed with me. I don't know if that landed with anybody else in the church. That's what landed with me. I was a kid who went to confession and lied. You know, like, I want, because I want to be normal. What's normal? I would ask everybody, how many lies you got? You know? How many times did you steal? I'm a 5-6-year-old. What does a 6-year-old have to confess? I had to make shit up, you know? So I was like taking a census of what the proper amount of lies and stealing and disobeying was. I didn't know. I would leave the confessional feeling guilty. Oh, Jesus, I just going to hell for sure, you know? And then puberty comes in, and then that's the end of that. I mean, I was going to go blind for sure. Or at least need glasses. I was going to quit when I needed glasses, but Look, isn't and that's what happened to me, by the way. I can no longer live up to the principles, so it was easier to just back away from them. And then at some point, deny them. Because my life no longer matched their teachings. My life no longer matched their beliefs. So rather than believe that I was going to hell, I would believe that it's not true. They're talking about Santa. They're not talking about reality. They're talking about something that just keeps children in line. And I convinced myself of that. And it took me down a path where anything was acceptable. And if it wasn't, you drink it away, you drug it away. Medicate. Yeah. I've justified the most errant nonsense. I've justified some brutal stuff. I've destroyed relationships and justified it with a bottle of Sigrum 7. You know, just drink it away. So when they talked about God being a solution, and I was given permission to create my own conception of God, what I desperately needed was a God of forgiveness in my life. What I desperately needed was a God of love in my life. And that's exactly what I created. However arrogant some people thought that was. You know, I have a God in my life that is love and no opposite, man. No opposite. There's nothing I can do to stop the God of my understanding from loving me. Nothing. Unconditional love. That's the God of my understanding. God never leaves. I leave. I disconnect. But God has never left me. My behavior will help cause me to disconnect. I can no longer medicate. I can no longer justify behavior anymore. I know the truth. And Bill gives us that formula. I mean, he uses that Columbus example with the formula. He gives us that formula. And more importantly for me, more importantly, and this is where it really happened for me, was he tells me where God is. It never dawned on me. How many of us were looking all over the place for God? Church to church, religion to religion, Bible studies, looking for God. And Bill reveals the fact. I mean, to me, it's that chapter to me is absolute genius. I mean, you know, how God inspired him to put this down on paper, to codify all those principles that have been through the ages into a form that an alcoholic and addict could accept. You know, that deep down within every one of us is the fundamental idea of God. Blocked by pomp, calamity, and worship of other things. Are you kidding me? Blocked by ego. The voice is telling me it ain't true. It's for kids. And the worship of money and women and cars. And anything that would make me feel better. Anything that would make you like me. Anything that would make me liked and accepted. That's what I was worshiping. The God of money. Because money was everything. Money was the car was the girl. That's the way I saw life. That sums up my whole life. It really does. That was my whole, if I was going to put, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to have a job, I want to have a car, I want to have a girl. That's it. That's it. And I'll be happy. Yeah. It wasn't even any specific girl. It was just a girl. Yeah. I didn't have any qualities. I had one. Deep down within every one of us. And I think we all know that's true, right? I mean, we all know that. Unless you're a sociopath, you have a conscience. A part of you that knows that it knows that it knows. Ben T. used to always call it the soul. The part of you that knows that it knows that it knows. No matter what I'm saying and no matter how I'm portraying myself, there's a part of me deep down inside that knows the truth. That's the God of my understanding, which means I have a personal relationship with God. Stop looking. Found him. Deep down in, call it your conscience, call it your soul, call it common sense, call it whatever you want to call it. But I think it's always been there. I see it in my grandkids. I've seen it in my children. Anybody have little kids where you see them come out of a room and they got that look on their face? Nobody had to teach them what they just did was wrong. They knew inherently it was wrong. You go, oh my God, what did you do? You know, you just see the look. You know? A personal relationship. Right? And then this transformation starts to take place. I start to get results. You know? I love the also in that reading that you guys read, the spiritual appendix, where the change takes place. See, to me, the change takes place immediately. That personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism starts to take place. I think it's a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening when somebody walks up to get a white chip. That's a surrender in itself. That's a personality change right there. I think it comes in a lot of small forms. And I love where it talks about that the people around us see us changing way before we notice that we're changing. Yeah. In our attitudes. You know, I don't know about you, but I would catch myself in traffic or driving along, and, you know, I want to tell somebody they're number one, you know? And I hesitate. I still might do it, but I hesitate. Or maybe I don't do it this time. And I might even, and I'm so impressed with myself that I have to share that with you, you know? That, you know, I came driving over here and a guy cut me off and I didn't give him the finger. And you know what I say next? And that ain't me. No, it's not me. No, it's not me. I'm being transformed. Something's happening. Something's changing. One of my favorite stories, like I sponsor a bunch of guys in Halfway. I do a big book study in a particular Halfway house up the road here. And so being as I do this big book study for the last 9 years or something, I sponsor a lot of guys there. You know, most of them want to phase up, but, you know, if you know what that is. So I sponsor a bunch of guys, and some of them get it, and a handful of them get it, and some of them, you know, you never hear from them again. But I have one guy in particular, and he comes up to me one day, and he's got about three months, and, you know, we've done the fifth step, and we're working on some amends, and he comes up to me, and he says, you know, I got a new guy in the house last night. I said, yeah, that's good. He says, yeah, he stole my food. I said, that's awesome. You know, he goes, no, I don't think you heard what I said. I got a new guy in the house last night. He stole my food. I said, man, that's great. You know, and he's got this puzzled look on. He says, I don't think you understand it. He says, there's three shelves, right? There's three of us in the room. My shelf's the middle shelf. New guy took my stuff off the middle shelf. I said, man, you're the best. He walked away. I know he was saying, I got the wrong guy. You know, this guy is just not listening. I can't even share with this guy. He's not hearing me. Right? He comes back a few weeks later. He says to me, I got a new guy tonight. We're working on 6 and 7, you know. A new guy tonight. I said, yeah. He says, what's up with that? He says, yeah, I fed him. Same thing. Same situation. What changed? His perception. His perception changed. A month before, the guy was stealing his food. Now he's feeding the guy. Right? It's a change in our perception. It's a change in our thinking. Right? The love Clancy's talk. It's a disease of perception. Right? Half of you are sitting here wondering, what in the hell am I sitting here listening to this loser for who got no life? All he does goes to AA meetings and speak. You know, what kind of life is that? And then the other half of you are sitting here going, how blessed am I, you know, to be sitting here and listening to a message of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And there's no difference in the two. The only difference is your perception of what's going on here. You're all sitting in the same seat, listening to the same guy say the same thing. And there's probably 100 different perceptions going on right now. Yeah. That's what this thing's all about. This thing has got to be a change in mindset. Somewhere along the line, I have to change the way I think. Change the way I act, and I'll change the way I feel. You know, I'm suffering consequences from my own actions constantly. Right? And we'll talk a lot about that in the next couple of weeks. I mean, look, to me, it's all about that. It's all now about revealing what my real problem is, right? It becomes a program of subtraction from here on in, right? If I know that God resides deep down within me, I don't need anything. I've got everything I need when I get here to recover. It's about now peeling the onion, right? It's now about removing the things that are blocking me from the God within. Well, what's blocking me? I'm angry. right? I've lost what I got. I need to get back what I had. You're going to take what I got. You know, people are talking about me out there. I'm full of guilt. I'm full of remorse from lost my child. I'm going through another divorce. You know, I'm losing my house. I'm caught up in all these material things that I'm worshiping day after day, and they're being torn apart. And I need to remove that stuff that's blocking me from the God within. And the rest of this program is about that. It's about peeling that onion. It's about getting rid of the stuff that's blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. As much as I would even want to have a relationship, I can't. I'm just caught up in all my stuff. And we'll see where that stuff is manifesting itself. That, you know, that selfish and self-centered people that we are is the root of the problem. And we're caught up in anger, and we're caught up in fear, and we're caught up in guilt and remorse and shame. And God can't enter that vessel. And I need to remove those things to expose that light. Thanks for letting me be here tonight.
I'll thank the speaker again. And let's bring up Stephanie for the secretary's report.
My name is Stephanie, and I am your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Mila to please come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why some people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
My name is Mila. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Recovered, we are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured, that presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
...1940-style Big Book sponsorship. From forward to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And is there anyone in need of a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Okay. Please join us Monday nights for the Big Book study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Oh, please stand up. Yes, stand up. Okay, recovered women, let's get this young lady back to God. Please join us Monday nights for the Big Book study meeting where the book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the Big Book study starts promptly at 7:15. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the little red Big Book, and Big Book dictionaries for sale in the back. There is also the 42nd annual Broward County Intergroup Picnic on Sunday, November 5th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Snyder Park. There will be live bands, raffles, games, nature trails, playground, horseshoes, dancing, volleyball, and face painting. Tickets are $8 up front, $10 at the gate. There is also the fourth annual Gratitude Days presented by the Gulfstream Group Speaker Conference going from Friday, November 10th from noon to 9:30 p.m. and Saturday, November 11th, 8:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. If you're looking for the hotel rates, they are $125 plus $15 resort fee. More information is in the back. Okay, that is that. So we meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
Okay, tonight's session, as well as other speakers, we have a podcast online free at alcoholicsandgod.org. We also want to invite everybody to our Monday night step studies. It's Monday at 7:15 upstairs. And those who wish to thank the speaker, please line up in the center. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Who are in heaven, hallowed be forever. Amen. Okay. Quick reminder, please, when you step outside, smoke 75 foot. Oh. Guys, please don't forget that we have smoking restrictions, 75 foot outside of the door for smoking and vaping. When you leave tonight, please do not light up or vape up until you're 75 feet away from the building.
On my feet again, on my own. do-do-za-za-za. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, ba 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 ba, when you're laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope